White Rocket Entertainment.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center. The Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, and now White Rocket TV. Yes, we have made the move to video. So this is the White Rocket Podcast, now as White Rocket TV, brought to you by, can't get it in the screen, WhiteRocketBooks.com, in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico. This week, to really kick things off, we wanted to have John Ringer on to talk about our favorite books that we're currently reading, but we've had some technical difficulties in making the connection between here and John, so we're going to delay that one until next time. And so for our first real full episode on the White Rocket TV, White Rocket Video, we're going to do listener and viewer questions. So I put out the call some time ago, and then again today, this morning, for questions for me, either about my work, my books, my stories, and so forth, or about what I think about various things of popular culture, movies, TVs, books, comics, and so forth. And I got a ton of awesome questions in a big hurry today. So I have them here on the trusty iPad, and we're going to answer your questions, if you're one of the people that asked, or maybe you're thinking that question and you didn't ask it, but I'm going to answer it anyway. So here we go. Without further ado, let's get right on into it. We'll make this about a 45-minute show, and we'll get out of here. So here we go with listener questions. All right. First up, several people asked me the inevitable question I knew was coming. When will we be getting another Sentinels book? What's the deal? It's a fair question. The Sentinels books were coming out about one a year, every year beginning in technically 2006, 5, 6 more or less. For quite a while, I was able to do one a year. In fact, the one year I didn't do a Sentinels novel, in between the first trilogy and the second trilogy, we did the anthology where we had several other writers do stories. But what happened was, after Volume 7 of the novels came out in 2012, I decided to get into writing a series, which became a trilogy, of novels, the Legion trilogy, the Shattering trilogy, which was eventually collected as this book right here, The Shattering. That is about nearly 300,000 words that I wrote in about 18 months in 2013 and 14. And so that really shifted my brain from superhero novels over into space opera. It's gothic space opera, science fiction, adventure, stuff like that. It's very difficult, at least for me, and we're going to talk more about the process of writing and everything because I've got some good questions about that. But for me, it's very difficult to just really dramatically change gears from one genre to another, or one subgenre to another. You know, when I'm working in one area, it's very easy for me to just keep rolling along in that area. But when I'm working, but when I want to shift over to another, it's difficult. It's like being stuck in the mud suddenly. So my brain went over into the science fiction world, and I've had a hard time getting back on track. And I've also had quite a few things I've had to do in terms of writing. You know, the Alpha Omega serial for Prose, and I did a story for the big Legends of New Pulp Fiction book that just came out. And I did a story for the Earth Station One anthology that came out at Dragon Con last year. And I wrote Baranak, which is a prequel novel that goes with Lucian, and that which plays into the Shattering as well. In fact, I'll talk about these two, Lucian and Baranek, coming up in a bit. So because all that was going on, I just kind of got derailed from the Sentinels track. But I guarantee you, you will have a new Sentinels novel this year. I've already written a good portion of it. I know exactly what happens in it and the next one. I've just got to write them. So look for Volume 8, The Dark Crusade, sometime probably this summer maybe. There's also always the factor with Sentinels books that I have to work with Chris Kohler, you know, the artist who does the interior and now the covers, as well as other factors that may, you know, delay things a little bit. So hopefully this summer you'll have The Dark Crusade, and then this trilogy that began with Metal God will wrap up with the untitled yet Volume 9. I'd love to get them both out this year. We'll see what happens. More about this later. Next up, Scott asks, why is military sci-fi so big right now? And he says, is sci-fi in general optimistic or pessimistic right now? Well, there's no doubt that military science fiction is big right now. You have a whole company, Bayon, that pretty much does almost nothing else, or at least that's certainly their specialty. And other companies do it as well. And I'd also argue, if I can get fixed here, I would also argue that there is a there's a British school and an American school, and the American school of military science fiction, I've always said, is much more technological, right? It's about super high tech, describing the high tech. It's got a lot of hard science fiction elements in it. It's much more about, usually with American science fiction, you can see a lot of American military influences in it. A lot of the military science fiction that is being published today from the United States is written by veterans, former American servicemen and perhaps women. So they have a very strong perspective, right? They have a story to tell, or many stories to tell. And they have something that, you know, they have a unique voice in that, and that's great. The British version of it seems to me to have a more fantasy aspects to it, right? Even if it's got hardcore kind of hard science fiction elements and technology, it also emphasizes a lot more fantastical elements. I mean, I'm thinking about the Black Library, the Warhammer 40,000 stuff, but even Peter F. Hamilton, right? A lot of what Peter F. Hamilton writes could be classified as both space opera, and he has a lot of military science fiction elements in it, but in his work, there is always, or often, an almost fantasy layer to his stuff. I mean, his stuff is hard to pin down. It's kind of space opera, it's got fantasy elements, and it's got a lot of military in it. So I would say that one of the reasons military science fiction is doing so well right now is that there are people who have military experience writing it, and that there's a whole company, two companies, if you count the United States with Bayon and the Black Library in the United Kingdom. There's at least two companies that's their main thing, right, that they're pushing. People seem to like it. And also, I think in this time of terrorism and concerns about safety in the future, we know we have to kind of depend on our military to keep us safe, in ways that are different, that are more active than maybe during the Cold War, right? During the Cold War, we could sit back and say we have our nuclear arsenal. The Soviets have their nuclear arsenal. That's, you know, 2 seconds to doomsday, perhaps. But it wasn't granular. It wasn't like somebody coming in with a bomb to blow up your restaurant or something, right? So with today's terrorism threat, it's much more at the individual, specific, local level, it seems like. And so being able to depend on not just impersonal nuclear arsenals, but on soldiers, on servicemen and women who actually get the job done, I think that maybe there's something to that as well. I'll leave it at that, because I'm sure there's more answers and stuff that I'm not even thinking of, I'm sure. But that's what, off the top of my head, comes to me. And yeah, his other question about optimistic and pessimistic. I think that science fiction was more optimistic in previous decades, and it's gotten more pessimistic now. You know, you see zombie apocalypses and post-apocalyptic stories. I've written several myself. And I think that it ties in with the popularity of some fantasy things right now is almost escapism. We feel like, you know, in some ways we're more pessimistic about the future than we used to be. We thought that we would have, you know, the old standby is the flying cars. Where's my flying car? But we thought we'd have moon bases. We'd be on the way to Alpha Centauri by now. We'd have a base on Mars. We'd have landed on Mars and not stranded Matt Damon there. And I think that because the future has not turned out to be what it was cracked up to be in the past, right? It's been a different future. The future has turned out to be a future of this, right? Not bases on Mars. It's driven by where the money goes, and money is in cell phones that can play movies in the bathroom. The money is not in putting Matt Damon on Mars. It's just not. So I think because people are somewhat disappointed in the future that we've gotten, and because of things that I just talked about, like fear of terrorism and so forth, and political discord and tension, I think that makes people turn to science fiction, but in a way as more of escapism rather than predictivism. Okay? So that's my thoughts on that. Clicking right along, because we've got a lot of questions to get to. Kevin asks, do you think Deadpool, the movie, will meet fan expectations? Will it be Iron Man Avengers level good? Well, you know, the thing about that is, I kind of miss Deadpool. And what I mean is, I read comics as a kid up into my teenage years, and then I went away through high school, through college, and into graduate school, and didn't read comics at all. I came back into comics toward the end of graduate school when I was off, you know, in Washington, D.C. by myself, alone and lonely and bored, and I started reading comics again. This was right before the internet, so, you know, I didn't even have that to turn to. So I started reading comics again, and that carried me pretty well through the next several years. But Deadpool apparently, I guess, had come along during that time, and I'd missed him. So when I start seeing him popping up in comics, and of course, he was an X-Men character, right? He's an X-Men character, and I never read the X-Men after the original 70s, early 80s Chris Claremont, John Byrne period. So I would see him popping up, and I had no idea who that guy was. He acted like Spider-Man. He kind of looked like Spider-Man, but he clearly wasn't. And so when I heard about the movie, I thought, okay, a Deadpool movie. Maybe now I'll finally find out who he is. So, but I'll say this in sort of indirect answer to Kevin's question. My students, my younger students that certainly know who he is and all about him, they seem more excited about this movie than almost any superhero movie I can remember people talking about in quite some time. So, yeah, it seems like there's a lot of expectation for it. There's a lot of hope for it. People are excited about it. And for me, I'm just curious about it. I'm just curious what the whole deal is about. So I'm going to go see it. But I have no preconceived notions. So, but Iron Man Avengers good? Probably not for me. Maybe for young people for whom he is like their Iron Man, you know. So we'll see. Okay, let's see. Oh, here's a question from David. David asks, what has it been like actually getting to meet some of your influences, and have any of them given you any advice you've been able to apply to your craft? That's a great question. I have been very, very fortunate over the last few years, in some ways because I do a lot of conventions. I'm on panels a lot. I get invited to a lot of conventions to appear. And so I've been placed on panels right alongside, you know, heroes from my childhood, my teenage years, my adulthood. I just went through the other day and was trying to gather all in one place the photos that have been taken of me with these people, and I was just amazed at how many. I mean, you know, just off the top of my head, I've gotten to meet David Michelinie, who wrote so many great Avengers and Iron Man and Spider-Man comics, and he's such a good guy. I got to meet and interview Joe Haldeman and Harry Turtledove, Harlan Ellison, you know. I've gotten to be friends with John Ringo. I've gotten to meet Kevin J. Anderson on several occasions. Timothy Zahn, you know, on and on and on. Also got to interview in front of a giant crowd at Dragon Con Bruce Boxleitner and Mira Furlan from Babylon 5, Sheridan and DeLynn. And while they're not, you know, writers, their work acting out Joe Straczynski's Babylon 5 stories was a huge inspiration on me as well, seeing them, you know, as the personification of those characters. So, yeah, it's been amazing. It's been thrilling and inspirational. And I don't know that I've gotten any specific sort of writing advice directly from any of them, but by interviewing them and talking with them and learning, you know, how their careers developed and the choices that they made, the things that they did, the decisions that they made in their career, those conversations all just sort of added layer upon layer of knowledge that I had that I can draw from, right? So the specific writing advice I've gotten over the years has largely come from reading things like Roger Zelazny's several essays on how to write science fiction or fantasy, things like that. But meeting them, I think, really just drawing from their experiences and being inspired by them and just getting to meet them and know that they really exist. They're real people you can touch and talk to. So that was really awesome. Yeah. And I wouldn't trade that for anything. I'm hoping to meet still more of them, right? There's a few out there I'd still really like to meet that have been big influences and have just entertained me, right? Just made me happy over the years. Reading their stuff makes me happy. So it's great to get to actually meet them and to bring those interviews to you whenever I'm able to remember to actually turn on the recorder. So sometimes I have, sometimes I haven't. Let's see. Tom asks, oh, this is cool. What classic TV series would you like to see rebooted like Battlestar Galactica? Well, there's no question Space 1999. We've been all kind of holding out for a Space 1999 reboot. Probably, you know, some people have called it Space 2099. I almost want to see kind of a retro Space 1999 that says what, you know, a modern take on what would 1999 have been like if we had created the Eagles and the moon base and all that we saw in Space 1999. So I almost want it to stay Space 1999. But on the other hand, because of the way that things have worked out about NASA and funding and technology and everything, it probably will be 2099 before we actually are even remotely able to do the things that we did in that show. And that's sad to me because I won't be here anymore. if it could be Space 2029, I could see that, you know, hopefully. But yeah, I would love to see them reboot 1999 in some fashion and make it a little more. I know, I mean, people say that, you know, the big problem with Space 1999, it wasn't plausible. And I think, okay, you know, a magical starship flying around the universe at warp speed with a half alien, half human crew member. Oh, that makes perfect sense. That's plausible. Yeah. But having a spaceship that we already have up there in the sky, the moon, right? It already exists. The main spacecraft in Space 1999 already exists. So, yeah, I would love to see that, and I have so many ideas. I wish I could be the showrunner on it, because I have so many ideas of how to do it, and for just a couple of tidbits. One of the things I would emphasize in a new version of Space 1999 is I would emphasize the potential for mutiny among the crew who feel like the commander is leading them somewhere they don't want to go, right? He should have tried to get them back to Earth. He shouldn't have just said, we're not going to try. Another thing I would emphasize, and so you could have factions. Another thing I would emphasize is the idea of, you know, on the original 1999, they had a great bureaucrat, Commissioner Simmons. He was a great character. I mean, he was sort of villainous. You didn't like him. He ended up being very villainous. But he was only in two episodes, in Breakaway and the one with Christopher Lee. And they got rid of him. Man, I would have loved to have seen that kind of a character that's working to undermine everybody else, you know, working to undermine the commander and his authority. And have a kind of a rivalry. I think that would be great. So the thing I do love about Space 1999 is that you'd get so many really far out, you know, alien type cosmic visitors to the base. I mean, that place was Grand Central Station. It's just this tiny little gray moon with a tiny little base on it hurtling through the cosmos, going through space warps, which is how it got much further away so quickly. People overlook that. And yet every alien with a British accent in the universe had to stop by and have some dealings with them. It was great. So, okay, moving on along here. Tom also asks, this is kind of an interesting hypothetical. Looking at the iPad here. Tom also asks, if the Marvel Cinematic Universe had started in 1993. Oh, this is a question I really need to get Jim Yelton on here to talk about. Jim and I could have a good conversation about this. If the Marvel Cinematic Universe had been started in 1993, I guess in like instead of 2008 with Iron Man, who would have been cast as the Avengers? Okay, well, honestly, I have no idea. But I will say this. My friends and I, some of you watching, we were casting such a movie every year for the last 30 years, right? So, one moment. So we've thought a good bit about it, but honestly, I have to admit, I never came up with a very good candidate to be Thor. I just didn't. That's kind of hard to cast. Chris Hemsworth kind of came out of nowhere and is perfect. But, in 1993, who would it have been? I don't know. I'm just not very good at casting. It's a great question, Tom, but let's ask Jim that the next time he's on the show. We'll think about it. And if you guys out there have any good ideas, leave them in the comments. In fact, by the way, don't forget to subscribe to White Rocket TV on our YouTube page and leave comments and rankings because that helps the show, as I understand it, to get more popular and more visible and more people will find it and it'll, you know, and all that would be great. So please do that. Don't forget to subscribe and to leave a comment. In fact, Mira made this little sign for the other show, for the Wishbone show. Yeah. Like and leave awesome comments. Well, that's what Mira says, so you can't go against that. Okay, moving right along here. James asks, what do you think is the future of comics? Oh, that's a big one, isn't it? The future of comics. Well, it's a future I'm not thrilled about, honestly. I'm a guy who grew up reading four-color, rough, pulpy paper, slick cover comics with lots of dialogue and lots of captions and a fair number of thought balloons. Those comics do not exist anymore other than the ones that were printed back then that you have in your long box or your short box or a stack somewhere. Those comics quit existing pretty much during the 1990s. During that time, comics became much more what we call cinematic, meaning that the pacing slows way down. In other words, it used to be that comics would show almost a scene every two or three panels. This happens. Meanwhile, over here, and this happens. Meanwhile, back at the Daily Bugle, this happens. And over at Avengers Mansion, this happens. And the Wasp thinks this about it. And Captain America says this. And Thor says this. All in the same panel. Now, you may spend two or three pages just slowly zooming in on Avengers Mansion without anybody saying or doing anything. And I guess that sort of replicates the feel of a movie. But see, to me, comics and movies are not the same medium. They're not. And they shouldn't feel the same. Comics have their own vocabulary, their own pacing, their own style. And making them into pamphletized movies, to me, does a disservice to comics because it makes them less unique and it takes away some of the things that comics do well in storytelling. So I like for comics to read like comics. So honestly, the comics that I read nowadays, with certain exceptions. Now, let me reach over here to my shelf and I'll show you, for example, I do still enjoy Darwin Cook's interpretations of Richard Stark's Parker books. But they're barely anything that today would be recognized as a comic book, because look at this. See, we're taking advantage of the new video medium to actually show the audience things. Look at how much text and how many panels, right? It's black and white with color tone. Those of you listening on the podcast, forgive me, but I am going to try to take advantage of a few things that being on video now will allow, such as that, just every now and then. And what I was doing was showing one of Darwin Cook's Parker graphic novel adaptations and how it looks and feels and reads so different from the average comic book of today. So I think the future of comics will continue to diverge from where they used to be, and certainly electronic transmission of them. Right, I mean, that's the way everything seems to be going. But I can see comics as iPads and similar tablet devices get higher and higher resolution, and that was the key, was getting that high resolution. As that happened, and here I'll show you an example here. As that happened, it gets easier and more pleasant to read a comic book on the iPad. So, for example... Oh, gosh, it's being slow. Come on. There. Now, I'm showing the cover of Avengers 158 on my iPad. See, there's a comic book that I would enjoy reading because it's written and drawn and laid out and structured in a style that I like my comics to be designed as. And on the iPad... You know, you can read it this way. Hey, it's old King Kong from 1976. See there? It's the resolution is high enough that you can actually read it without having to blow the panels up. So that, to me, is certainly one possible future of comics. How long will they continue to print the pamphlets? I'm doing the air quotes. The pamphlets, right? The little installations? I don't know. They're certainly not, you know, one of the advantages of individual comic books used to be they were so cheap. You know, I'd go buy them for 25, 30, 35 cents in my heyday. So you could get a little piece of a story for just pocket change. But today, even the little comic book, the little pamphlet comic books cost so much, $4 or $5, you know. I can buy a paperback book just about for that and have many hours more entertainment. Of course, you know, the thing today, and I'm just looking around for an example of this, would be the graphic novel or trade paperback collection. And I'm showing a copy of the new Marvel Star Wars comic. And it's very cinematic, not like comics I used to like to read. See there? They even start with the A Long Time Ago in a Galaxy Far, Far Away in a whole page just by itself. In a Marvel comic from the 70s or 80s, that would have been a caption at the top corner of the first panel. So for $22, you get about 45 minutes worth of entertainment there. You decide. You make the call. You decide if that's worth it. So, yeah, I think comics will continue to diversify in different media, and I don't know how long we'll still have the pamphlets. We'll see. Good question, James. Let's see. Steve asks, if I were going to try your novels, which one should I start with? Well, start with any of them. the way I answer that generally, novels, just novels, because I write a lot of short stories, I write a lot of nonfiction. But if people ask me about novels, I've written 13 novels as of January 2016 when we're recording this. I've written 13 novels, most recently, this is kind of hard, it's like looking in the mirror, most recently this one, Baranak. I'm pointing at Baranak there. That's number 13. I always classify them into two categories. There's my superhero novels, of which there are 7 currently. And there are my science fiction shattering universe novels, of which there are 6 currently. If you want to read superheroes, you have no choice in my work but to start with When Strikes the Warlord. When Strikes the Warlord, I don't have a copy of it handy, do I? No, I do not. When Strikes the Warlord is volume 1, and the Sentinels are written serially. So, you know, you read the whole series. You start with When Strikes the Warlord, and then go to A Distant Star, Apocalypse Rising, The Shiva Advent, World Mind, Stellarax, Metal God, and now I'm working on number 8. The Dark Crusade. Okay, so start with that. But if you want to read my science fiction universe, which is space opera, military, gothic, all kind of stuff going on, really, you probably should start. It's like looking in the mirror. It's very confusing. You should start with Lucian. Lucian, I'm going to take it down and risk destroying my set behind me. Oh, there goes my stuffed Iron Man. I'll fix him in a minute. I have lots of Iron Mans, Iron Men in my set behind me here. Lucian is my, is my best reviewed book. It has many, many five-star reviews, which I definitely appreciate. Thank you all so much for taking the time to write them. Gorgeous new cover art by Mark Williams. Mark, thank you so much. I love your work as always, and it's such an honor to have it on my books. But Lucian is the first book in my science fiction universe. There's a fair amount of what seems like fantasy in it. But screen keeps going dark. That's weird. There's my stuffed Iron Man. Hello, stuffed Iron Man. It really is a science fiction book. Okay, I've just been repairing the set for those listening on the podcast. I knocked everything loose. So Lucian is where it begins. There's the Shattering Trilogy, which is collected in this omnibus. There's Hawk, which you see that the Hawk cover art back there behind the Battlestar Galactica and behind Iron Man. There you go. You can see the Lords of Fire, which is the first volume in the Shattering. The cover art by Mark. Just amazing cover art Mark's been doing for this series. So start with Lucian. If you're more wanting to read just more like the military aspects of it, though, you can safely skip Lucian because the Lucian and Baranak are in like the god part of my Shattering universe. It has cosmic Jack Kirby type gods. And then there's humans with big weapons, okay? So Lucian and Baranak are sort of the Jack Kirby cosmic gods part of my science fiction universe. And Hawk and the Shattering Trilogy, those four are more the military stuff, soldiers, you know, of different types. So start with either Lucian or Lords of Fire, I would say, or Hawk. You know, I don't think enough people have read Hawk. I think that more people need to read Hawk. I don't mean that in a any kind of an egotistical way or anything. I just mean that if you're going to read my other science fiction books, I mean, I feel like Hawk is, you know, to me, it's right up there. So I feel like it hasn't gotten quite as much attention, maybe because it's just one book. It's not part of a trilogy or a duo yet, but there's more coming. Falcon will be coming. In fact, I'll go ahead and mention this because somebody's going to ask me toward the end here what's coming up, and I will mention I've been waiting for quite a while to write the sequel to Hawk, and it's called Falcon, and it'll be along as soon as I get the Sentinels out of the way. So, okay. Let's see. Tom asks, what classic comic book storyline would you like to see adapted to a movie or a TV series the way Netflix does? Man, there's so many. I would love to see, I know this is not a new one, we already have a Daredevil show, but I would love to see Netflix do the Daredevil show and have that storyline with Elektra and Bullseye. Because I'm not much of a street-level superhero guy. I like the cosmic stuff and, you know, the Avengers and all that kind of stuff, the, you know, Galactus and everything. That's in my wheelhouse more. You know, even the X-Men and the Shi'ar, that's kind of in my wheelhouse. But the exception to that largely is that amazing Frank Miller storyline on Daredevil, where he had a running battle pretty much with the Kingpin and Bullseye, and it involved Elektra. So if they could somehow do that on the Netflix show, that would be amazing. They tried to sort of do it in that Ben Affleck movie, but that was kind of a primitive effort. I'd like a really nice, well-written, drawn-out, you know, Frank Miller storyline Daredevil. Now, for something original that could be a new movie or a series, you know, I'm gonna zag instead of zigging here. I've got it. This is what I've desperately wanted to see as a movie or a TV series for 22 years now, and we haven't come close to getting it. I'd like to see The Shadow Empires, or Iron Empires, by Christopher Moeller. The Faith Conquers storyline would make such a great HBO series or a Netflix series. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go Google it. Look it up on Amazon. It's out there. It's in trade paperback. It's in comics. Christopher Moeller, who's an artist, he's done a lot of work for Magic the Gathering and stuff. But he did a limited series, like four issues of that, called Faith Conquers, and four issues of Shiva's War. It is space opera, military stuff, but it is fantastic. I would love to see that. Moving right along. We've got to wrap up soon. I have to go get Mira. She's got it early out. In fact, we may have to do a part two where I answer more questions. I'm going to answer... I think I'm going to answer one more question now, and then we'll come back in a day or two, and I will do part two with more questions. Okay? So, last question. Actually, the questions I have left are really good and will take some time to think about and to answer. And I don't know if I have time right now to give them the proper answers they deserve. So, let me go ahead and kind of wrap things up for this episode. I'm going to say... I think I'll close with this, and then I'll revisit it at the end of next episode also, about what's coming up. I mentioned that we've got two Sentinels books coming up, and I mentioned that I'd love to do Falcon, the sequel to Hawk, at some point. It's no secret. I'm not protecting any secrets here. You know that if I did, if the first book was called Hawk and the co-stars were Falcon and Raven, then probably book two would be Falcon, and you can probably guess what book three will be. So I would love to do that. I've already got the whole plot for Falcon completely plotted out. I know exactly what happens in that book. So we're gonna do that next. The other thing that I would really like to do, so we got two Sentinels books and Falcon. The other thing that I would really like to do, but I haven't plotted it out at all yet, is a fourth Legion book. Now, I know that this leaves, having it as a trilogy is nice, it's crisp and clean, three books, Legion 1, Legion 2, Legion 3. But I left things sort of at a, not hanging, but I left things at a state at the end of Kings of Oblivion, Legion 3, where there's definitely, room to go forward and explain more, flesh more out. Big conflicts looming. There's a lot of questions that are still out there about the machine and about the hands and about the legions and all that and about some of the more evil gods that have popped up here and there. So I would love to do that. And also, the other thing I know I'll be writing in the next year is the Legion Chronicles Book 2. I did Cold Lightning as about a 100-page novella back in March. Wrote the whole thing in a week while I had the flu. Was stuck on the couch, couldn't do anything else, sat there with this iPad and wrote the entire thing. I'm really happy with Cold Lightning. People seem to like it. So I think that Legion 2, which I think will be, Legion Chronicles 2, which will be called Red Colossus, that has to get done at some point in the next year too. So that's a lot that I'm putting on my plate. But we'll see if I can pull it off. Some of it will undoubtedly get pushed into 2017. Man, 2017. All right. Okay, so the Rocket's going to get on out of here for now. If you asked me a question and you didn't hear it asked and answered yet, I'll be back in the next day or two to cover the second half of Questions for Van. So thank you guys so much for watching. The Rocket's going to get on out of here for another episode, and we will see you all. And by the way, make sure to visit WhiteRocketBooks.com, www.WhiteRocketBooks.com. The site's going to be updated soon. Brett Brooks, awesome guy, good friend, is working on putting us a state-of-the-art website up. Finally. The current website looks like it was created by somebody in Notepad in 1995, and that's probably because I created it in Notepad. Well, not in 1995, but that's when it started. But I did create it in Notepad. So I'm looking forward to a fully functional modern website for WhiteRocketBooks.com in the days to come. So, okay, Rocket's going to get on out of here. We'll see you guys down the road. Don't forget to subscribe. Don't forget to like and leave comments. And tell people to check out the White Rocket Podcast and now White Rocket TV.
Listen, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.